2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce, live and direct from Florida with Dylan from Canada. We're like, we're covering like more or less all of like North America. There's a large distance between us, but we are covering. I'm down here for baseball. Dylan's back up there doing his drafting. We were talking about that before you hopped on air. Dylan, how has the off season been going? We're immersed in draft season now. How have your drafts been going now that you're the big dog?
Not bad. Finished a DC draft champions, draft and hold. In the middle of a second one, I'm pairing up with Brian Slack, the retired Brian Slack, who's only dipping a toe in and trying to not stay involved. But I think he's happy to kind of still be following along. And then I'm going to do a super with Jordan Rosenblum this week, actually. We're drafting in the sixth spot. So that'll be nerve-wracking. 1 minute clock. I'm not used to a fast clock. Hopefully my DCs have been my training and my prep. So I can kind of know where to pivot if need be.
Good. That's fun to hear. I actually did a DC myself for the first time in a couple of years last night with my friend Dan. Shout out to Dan. And our DJ, his lovely fiance, Elle. She was playing music the whole time. We were just vibing, making picks. It was, I like the team, but, you know, those are famous last words. We've all been there where we like the team. It doesn't work out. But I'm hoping this works out. Had a good strategy going in. Feel like we executed it a little bit. But a lot of fun. A lot of fun having a co-manager where there's some cash involved and, like, they're doing some strategy stuff. And Dan worked with me on my labor team this year, too. So... in my NL only. So if I do really well this year, I think I probably owe a large chunk of it to Dan as my Sherpa, so to speak, like just shepherding me through you know, the rocky terrain of these different drafts and leagues, etc. But hey, we have some more bad news this week. Not as much bad news as I felt we dealt with last week. Like, I was updating the stock watch, go in and check that out. We do a stock watch every 2 weeks. Just sort of looking at how things have changed, maybe some updates that have been made on the dynasty rankings. Dylan, of course, helped on those rankings. And then you went out there and you did an update on our redraft rankings, which were great. That's actually what I used sort of as the roadmap last night in my draft. But when I was updating the stock watch, there was so much stuff, Dylan, that I had to write about. Like, there, it was just like a dozen injuries that I got to the end and there was like some smaller stuff where I'm like, we're not even moving this guy. Like, I'm not even going to address this because we had, you know, we had plenty of jelly already in the donuts. So let's go into some of the news from this week that isn't so good. Yuri Perez, at first they said it was a fingernail issue. Now it sounds like it's an elbow issue. He went, I think he had a consultation with a surgeon. I'm assuming we're going to learn more here. This stinks, man. This stinks. I just, number one, even outside of the fantasy stuff, outside of the Marlins stuff, this just stinks. I just want to, as a baseball fan, as a baseball writer, I just want to watch Yuri be good, you know? So that aside, what are you doing right now with Yuri Perez? In Dynasty, I don't think you trade him. He's so young that probably not a tradable. The person that you necessarily want to trade right now. But in redraft, you're in a spot. So are you just avoiding him altogether? Sort of, how are you navigating the Yuri Perez thing in redraft and then in Dynasty?
In redraft, I am avoiding him. I think there's a reasonable chance he's like misses the season. The surgeon he's seeing is the same surgeon who did the Tommy John on Sandy Alcantara. That's my understanding. I was kind of not taking him in redraft anyway. He's in that he's in the sixth round, yeah, generally. And it's like, I do love the upside. I feel the way I draft is I like safety. And so he's a bit too risky for me. He's got too many error bars, as Brian Slack would say. So it hasn't really affected me there. I do know that, like, with him and now Cole, and like Bradish and Senga, and, you know, insert name here, all the pitchers are getting pushed up. So it's getting really dicey. So I'm kind of glad I don't have Yuri in any leagues, because I could easily see I would have him, and I would have been sweating bullets right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have him in a couple of dynasty leagues, and it's a real shot to the gut. Like, because I think you were kind of looking at it as like, not that I was counting on him to be an ace, but, you know, I had him as like sort of like a four in a lot of these spots, and sort of viewed him as somebody where, like, all right, like, he's my number four this year. As long as he's solid and I get maybe 140 innings, I'm golden. And you're hoping that he's building up to, you know, 170, 180, 190, 200 innings over the next couple of years. And this sort of, if it is, you know, worst case scenario, that's the most frustrating part, is it sets that buildup back to almost one, you know, that you're almost behind where you were coming into this season, or what you anticipated you would be. So just from like a fantasy perspective, or, you know, someone who rosters him in multiple dynasty leagues, not great, Dylan, not something I'm excited about. Another player who might be my most drafted player throughout draft season, that would be TJ Friedl. I own him on every single team, Dylan. It's bad. He's he got hit with a pitch, I believe, and it was is it a hammock bone injury?
I believe broken wrist. He dove in the field.
Okay. I missed the play. All right,
there. Yeah, it was supposed to be a wrist sprain, and then now they saw it's fractured. So yeah, 1 to 2 months, I think they're saying.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty. That stinks too. It's so funny. It's like how, like, I was avoiding Cincinnati Reds because of the infield logjam and even the outfield logjam. And now, you know, Noel V suspended and now Friedl injured. It's kind of like there's a lot of clarity now. And in the DC I'm in, we're in the 21st round. And basically, as soon as the Friedl news broke, Jake Fraley was grabbed like immediately. So you can see it all kind of work itself out in real time. But sorry, I interrupted your performing an elegy for a eulogy for TJ Friedl. Go ahead. Yeah, continue.
No. I was saying, and I like I said, I hadn't seen the play. I saw the injury note last night when I was going to the drafts, because I've been cutting video all day. You know, I knew that he had been injured. I didn't know to what extent, and obviously I didn't know how it happened. So that's tough. I have him, like I said, in probably four or five teams. So I'm very exposed there. So that doesn't feel good. But as you said, Jake Fraley now slides into an everyday role. Good for, you know, his managers and those that roster him. I'm not one of them, but maybe I should have been. Let's talk about some more disappointing news here. Johan Duran, oblique injury. He's going to go to the IL and we'll miss the opening of the season. Griffin Jacks is the big winner here. Do you have any Duran shares? What would you be doing? And were you able to get Jacks anyplace?
I don't have any Duran shares. I'm writing a redraft strategy article now, which may be out in the next day or two. And it was kind of looking at the landscape of the relievers, and it's like him, Edwin Diaz and Josh Hader are kind of like the first three closers off the board in the third. Obviously that's not going to happen anymore. With this Duran news, which makes the, you know, Edwin Diaz and Hader even more sort of, maybe they'll be taken in the second round, and that'll push like the Duvals and the Class A's up to the third. Like, it's just going to have a whole ripple effect that I haven't even really considered yet. Jacks, I don't have. I do have Brock Stewart in that DC. I liked what Brock Stewart was doing last year. He added velo. He really outdid his projections, and I think the projections are kind of not accounting for him kind of becoming a new pitcher. So we have Brock Stewart. He was like a 45th round pick in our DC, our 50 round DC. So no Jacks though. But Jacks I really like. I wish I had Jacks.
Yeah, it's funny. I had him a lot in saves hold leagues, deeper saves hold leagues a few years ago, and had traded him out or tossed him back into like auction or something. And now I'm like, dang, like I wish I had held on to this guy. I had a great year last year. And then, you know, follows it up with an opportunity to maybe get some saves for a little bit in the beginning of the season. So he's popping on the radar. I think he was a guy that was sort of popping with the Driveline offseason, you know, hype videos too. So maybe Griffin Jacks is a name to think about in a variety of formats, including saves holds long-term.
Sorry to interrupt. It's funny. Yeah. I just got a message from Tim McLeod, my partner in one of my dynasty leagues. And he said, hey, this is good news for us with Jacks, which I forgot. So we took Griffin Jacks.
There you go.
And we took Joel Piamps as the last two picks in our FYPD. So this is like an Ian Khan. Maybe I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. It's an Ian Khan strategy in FYPDs. Is you trade your sixth round pick for like everyone's like next four picks they don't care about anymore, and then you just take spec closers, and then by the time the season starts, it may have paid off on one of them. So we have Piamps and Griffin Jacks apparently. So now we have too many. So not to gloat in the injuries, but
no,
it's funny that this happened.
It's good business if you can pull that off. Totally agree. It's often what I've been doing in the Raz 30 FYPD for years, loading up on some of those late relievers that can help you out. And there's a variety of reasons there, but let's talk a little bit. I know last time we had more of the ominous, uncertain Gerrit Cole news and update the last time that we spoke. He was going for a visit, and then it was declared that he doesn't need surgery, at least for now. So it was a little bit more clarity than what we had before, but barely? No?
Yeah, I mean, it was, so didn't need TJ. 1 to 2 months, they said. No PRP injections either. And so that was like, okay, good. So, you know, maybe 1 to 2 months, maybe he'll, you know, count on him for 100, 120 innings, maybe. And then he had some interview and he was like, he's very confident he'll be back this season. And, everyone was like, back this season? What are you talking about? That's like, why are you suddenly changing? I don't know. Why are you using that language? And so I think, people got spooked by that from what I was seeing. And because we've seen the stories with the New York teams where they're like, oh yeah, no, it's only going to be, you know, this amount of time. Yeah. And then it keeps dragging out. And then you find out the guy's dead. So people are kind of worried about Cole. I've seen him fall quickly in these main events. I think in one, he was down to the 12th.
Yeah.
I think I'd steer clear in main events where you have a 7-man bench and no IL slots. You don't really want to stash unless, you know, the guy's going to be back after 1 month or 2 months. So for me, he's not a stash. I think, especially with his, you know, the latest kind of ominous news that he may not be back. And after the 1 or 2 months, I'm definitely steering clear. So it's just not worth the hassle for me.
Yeah, I agree. But I do think, like, for me, he's sort of a hold in my home keeper league where I'm going to hold on to him. He's too valuable. And hopefully he comes back healthy, and then I can make a determination as to whether I sell him next offseason or not. It's going to be at a cut rate versus what I could have gotten for him a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
But you just have to accept that with pitchers, you know. So we'll see, you know, we'll see. I was trying to go for it this year. He was kind of like, you know, going to push me over the top, give me my first championship in that league, but it's not going to happen. So we'll see. Why don't we talk a little bit? Oh, we have some more news here. I know you plugged this in as we're starting to get updates on rotations and who's getting the spots, etc. Gavin Stone was announced as the Dodgers' fifth starter for now. He's looked good this spring. Are you back in?
I think I am. I think I am back in. I really loved Stone a couple of years ago, a year or two ago.
Yeah.
I thought he was, you know, kind of on par with Bobby Miller. as ridiculous as that sounds now, maybe in hindsight. So I always was a Gavin Stone guy, so I really like this for him. It looks like he's kind of cleaned up his mechanics. He may have been pitch tipping. I think that's what they're saying. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how he does. I know he tore through a Korean national team yesterday. I think it was like 8 strikeouts in 3 innings or something like that. So getting into MLB shape. I'm looking forward to seeing Gavin Stone.
Yeah, as well. And I think if you sort of weathered the storm there as a Gavin Stone, manager, you know, have him rostered, for sure, man, like it's paying off again. I think potentially he has an opportunity to be pretty good. This is a great team and we'll see what happens, you know. And for now, he has an opportunity. It sounds like, I don't know if you saw this update this morning, it sounds like Shohei Ohtani has an opportunity to potentially come back and pitch in September. Did you happen to see that note?
I just saw the headline that he was starting a throwing program.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it meant that means he could be on track for September. That's interesting.
That was like hinted at.
I see. Well,
I think with Brace, it's typically like, I know this isn't a great example now because he's injured again, but like Nick Frosso threw within like 10 or 11 months after Brace surgery. So, you know, it might be something where he's just back at that point, but it's okay, Shohei. We just want you to hit home runs, steal some bases, drive in runs, have a crazy season in the NL this year. And we'll have you go 40-40 and Julio Rodriguez go 40-40 for the Mariners. That's one of my hot takes for the season. It's not that hot. I mean, Julio was like 8 home runs and like 3 steals away from 40-40 last year. So it's not that big of a jump, but I think it's possible. I'm all in. And I got him last night in my DC. So, you know, I gotta hype myself up here. I think as far as notes, news, all that sort of stuff, we're sort of through all of it. Why don't we take a quick break and we come back, we can talk some updates to the redraft and dynasty rankings, but we can also talk about my experience at the spring breakout from the Thursday and from Saturday. What do you say, Dylan?
Let's do it.
All right. We'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about using Indeed is how it does a lot of that organizational work for me. I can sort through candidates. I can respond to them. I can schedule interviews all through Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And we're back. All right, Dylan, as I had teased before the break, we're going to talk some updates that we did on the site. We updated the redraft rankings. We also updated the dynasty rankings, which is something that we've done 3 times now or 4 since we released.
I think 3 maybe.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I think it was 3. I think you're right. I think it's been 3. Every 2 weeks we've been updating. So been trying to stay on top of those for you as you handle each of your drafts throughout draft season. We already got more stuff we're going to have to update, but if you listen to this podcast, it's a perfect companion for the list to make sure you're informed on the most recent updates of, you know, news, notes, camp battles, injuries, all that type of stuff. Dylan, any sort of big picture stuff with the updates to either rankings, trends you're seeing, things that maybe you regret from the offseason, anything like that?
I regret everything, Jeff.
I do all the time.
I think the big high level. So what happens is DCs happen. You get some ADP from DCs. This is an NFBC kind of focused discussion. People start with the DCs like immediately. As soon as the season ends, people start jumping into draft champions and you get an ADP from that. And then, you know, kind of creeps up and down as people sign, as closer roles kind of get finalized. And then main event season starts, which just happened this week. And what you usually see is the pitchers get pushed up, that main event pitchers are hot commodities. And I think we're seeing that, especially with Yuri Perez, Kevin Gausman, Garrett Cole, Kyle Bradish, all these guys who are going to be SP1s and SP2s going down with injury. And so, you know, where there are 15 options and now they're only 12, you're just seeing them getting pushed up and pushed up. And then you get around like the Chris Sale, Shane Bieber, Carlos Rodon, Blake Snell, who are really good pitchers when they pitch or if they're signed to a team. But we don't know if they will be able to throw 200 innings, if we don't know if they have some sort of arm injury like Rodon or Bieber, where their velocity has been down. So those guys are kind of in like the round 6 through 8 area. And that's where, like, you don't want those guys as your ace. So you have to pick some pitching up front. So what I'm seeing is you kind of got to go heavy pitching in the first 5 or 6 rounds. And if you want to compete in overall, which I'll be talking about in this redraft strategy article that's coming out, you need to take your closers too. So in your first 6 or 7 rounds, you're going like 4 or 5 pitchers just to be able to be kind of in the conversation. And
100%.
I know, yeah, in the DCs I've been in, I know it's difficult. You see like all these guys like Rosarena, Luis Robert, and Jose Altuve, and Matt Olson getting taken. And it's like, oh, like how am I going to get my power and my speed and all that stuff? But because all the pitchers go up, all these other hitters in the middle areas fall down. So, you know, you just have to kind of stay patient and stay kind of with your convictions that, you know, you'll be able to get a Willy Adames later, like in the 15th round, or like someone like a Jeff McNeil in the 20th round at second base. Like if you're just patient, you'll be able to fill out your positions and you don't need to worry too much that you're missing out on the Nolan Joneses and all those guys.
Yeah, agree.
So my recommendation in the article is kind of go pitching, go maybe more pitching than you normally would think to do in the first, you know, 6 or 7 rounds.
Yeah. And I think building that base is super important, and it's not just having like the two guys and the closers, it's being deep enough to have those players up top that like boost everybody else up, and then finding the depth behind it and like, you know, making sure that it all works together. I think it almost covers you that if you do miss one of those starters or one of those closers for, you know, a month or two, it's not the end of the world. You can still keep up with some of the other depth if you have another, you know, high end sort of arm. And as far as closers, they were just flying off the board. I mean, like, I probably could have, we went with a hitter in the 4th round, and I honestly probably could have gone with the closer there. You know, we did end up with, I think it was 5 pitchers coming out of the first 7 rounds, so we did sort of stick to that. But it can be a little chaotic there. I mean, we were scrambling and watching. It was one of those things where we kind of made the pick, you know, a few picks get made with hitters, and then all of a sudden it was like the 3rd closer run, and it was like, all right, like we're going to miss, you know, Munoz and some of these other guys like Bednar, whoever it is that was dropping, and ended up with Kimbrel, who was sort of like that final tier that I was willing to sort of accept as my second closer. So I agree. I think it was a smart strategy, and I hadn't even spoken with you about that. And we sort of followed a similar roadmap, at least in the DCs. I think in different drafts, you do different things. You know, if there's no move limits, there's daily moves like an RCL or something like that.
Yeah.
I really only need one good starter and I need closers and just a lot of hitting. So you just attack it. You attack it differently based on what the scoring is and what the strategy and advantage is in terms of, you know, optimizing innings and at bats, because that is at the end of the day the name of the game. Anything else you want to talk about in terms of the updates, or do you want me to dive into my spring breakout experiences?
Yeah, do it. You've got the zinc on your nose. You've got you're wearing the Speedo. You're enjoying the Florida weather, so might as well.
The Speedo.
The firsthand account.
Imagine. It's more like I wear long sleeves everywhere in Florida. I use lots of sunscreen and a bucket hat, and I still get sun, but I don't get sunburned. So it all works out. Ended up heading out to the park Thursday afternoon. Saw the major league game, got to see Grayson Rodriguez, that Orioles team against the Pirates. That was a ton of fun. And then park kind of clears out a little bit, and we were able to kind of work our way down. So it was right behind home plate. You could sort of see my blue shirt, like right behind home plate, like right at the top of the shot. You can't see my head, but you can see my blue shirt. So it's right behind home plate for Skeens versus Povich. Povich went three innings. The Orioles only threw two different starters. They threw Cade Povich and they threw Trace Bright. Two interesting arms. Bright's overall pitch mix looked a lot better than when I saw him last spring, like May timeframe when I went to see Jackson Holliday in Brooklyn. Still riding the fastball, was like 93 to 95. Good secondary stuff. Better, more solid secondary stuff. Good might be a little bit of a reach, but much tighter than when I saw him the previous year. I like Cade Povich, and I think it was Chris Clegg that threw the comp out there of Max Fried, and then I can't unsee it now. And it's very similar. Deep arsenal pitches. He's got some feel for spin, fastball, 92 to 94 from the left side, so it works. Has some command. He got hit a little bit. Some of it was just sort of bad luck, tight strike zone, some of those things. But I thought overall, if you watch the game, he showed, his sort of deep repertoire of pitches and his pitchability and the fact, all right, this could be a guy that could come up and give the Orioles some innings this year. And decent quality innings from a left-hander, which I think is valuable. My buddy's cat, Wally, he agrees as well. And then, of course, Paul Skeens came in, and it was just 102 to your face. That's, rock concert status stuff with him versus Holliday. And the top of that order was Bradfield. He just chewed up Bradfield with nothing but velocity. And then, comes back against Holliday, falls behind 3-1. And then slider, back foot slider, comes right in with a changeup off the plate, and Holliday chased it. It was a great pitch. It was a really good look. And then he showed a two-seam fastball. I think it might have been the splinker that he talked about in that interview with me prior to the spring breakout series, that he said he wasn't allowed to throw at LSU. It's like a two-seam type of dealio. So that was really interesting pitch at 97. That's what Connor Norby sort of hit. I put the video up there. I cut it all up. I actually marked all the pitches and the velocity, so you can go back and watch the entire outing and just see exactly what it was. It was a lot of fun. And be able to see it from that angle versus the TV angle, I think always adds an element of like, wow, like how live the stuff was. That was really impressive. The Pirates pitching overall was really impressive. The only hit that they allowed was an infield single from Enrique Bradfield. We just outran the throw. This goes to show you how good that was. Bubba Chandler looked excellent. Unfortunately, he pegged our large adult son, Creed Williams, put it right off his elbow pad with 98 miles an hour. I haven't gotten an update on Williams yet, but I'm hoping he's doing okay. But his stuff was nasty. I mean, in terms of fastball quality, that was about as good as it gets. Also, Braxton Ashcraft, who's maybe like a decent, deep name, late round type of name to know as a potential option in the Pirates bullpen. I saw him again today. It was like 97. Today it was like 94, 96, but it was like 97, 96, 97 on the Trackman. Really, really loud. Good hard, cutter slider in the upper 80s, low 90s. and he's got some stuff. I think he could potentially be a true weapon out of the bullpen. Hunter Barco threw a couple innings. He was okay. As far as the hitters, it wasn't like a super loud game. Tamar had a hit, looked okay. Of course, Jackson Holly looked fine. I mean, he did blister a ball at like 100 miles an hour the other way, but unfortunately for Jackson Holliday, it was caught. Lonnie White looked kind of interesting. You know, I thought he was a name to know. And then I have my my Phillies versus Tigers game, but I'll ask you, Dylan, any questions that you had on my experience with the Skeens thing, you know, seeing Skeens and the Orioles and all those guys?
Yeah, you like Cade Povich coming up this year for the Orioles. You think him versus Chase McDermott, who would you, if just for redraft, just asking for a friend, which option of those two would you pick?
I think the fact that he pitched in the breakout game would tell me that McDermott is probably the better bet. I think he's a little more startery. I think that McDermott's upside's a little bit higher, but he might be a little bit more versatile just because the stuff is so loud. Better fastball than Povich, you know, comes from that Orioles slash Astros mentality where everybody kind of has a slider, a curveball, or like two breaking ball shapes and a changeup. I love McDermott, but it's heavily fastball slider, and I worry he could just be more of a reliever. But I think he'll get first crack. I think he'll get a crack before Povich does. But Povich was a good piece. He's really interesting.
And Paul Skeens will be up in the majors this year early in the first half, or
I didn't even see him on the backfields today. Like, I think he's with the major league team still. The way that they're handling him, and I don't really know anything about this, so I'm speaking out of my butt, but like the way that they're handling, this is just my vibes, Jeff's vibes in the backfield. Okay. The vibes that I'm getting is that like, they're limiting the Skeens innings here and there and like in the minors. And I think he gets a few starts in double A, maybe a few starts in triple A, or maybe it's five starts in triple A. I bet you they build up in terms of innings. And then I think I think he's in the big leagues. I think he's in the big leagues by June 1st. I'll say, I would be shocked if he's not in the big leagues by June 1st. It would have to be an injury, or he would have to be really ineffective, which I don't think is going to happen against minor league hitters. So yeah, I think Skeens is up this year. No doubt.
I like it. Backfield vibes with Jeff Ponce.
Backfield vibes. As for the Philly Tiger game, it was a little bit more excitement. I saw Mick Abel. I saw my boy, Griff McGarry, who gave up a home run to Jace Jung because he had to, because he knows that I like Jace Jung. So he's like, I'm going to let him hit a homer. And then he struck out three of the other four batters he faced. So stuff really good there. He's going to be a reliever. I just don't think McGarry's going to start. You heard me say it. I admit it. I don't think he's going to start. Mick Abel, man, I'm kind of worried about. Like, the stuff is so loud, Dylan, but he just doesn't get out. I never see him consistently just – I haven't seen him, like, work a lineup in 2 years. The last time I saw it was, like, the end of the season against Hartford in 2022. But a couple times I saw him last year, he pitched fine, but he just never, like, dominates. And it was the same here. He got hit around a little bit, struggled with command – got some swings and misses here and there, but it wasn't like a dominated inning. Max Clark looked good. Max Clark made some good contact a couple times, ran the bases well. He takes a ton of pitches, really works deep in accounts. You know, I don't know how much power is there based on the stance, based on he's a really strong kid already and that's kind of smaller frame. But, you know, if you told me he hits 18 home runs, steals 30 bases, hits for two, you know, 280 average with a good on base, you know, 10%+ walk rate, I'd be all in. Like, I think he's a really interesting player. I don't think he's going to be like a 30-30 guy or somebody like that. If that's what you think Max Clark is, I would bet against it. I'd pick the under on in terms of the power, but he's a really good ball player, real exciting, and will be pretty fun for Detroit fans. So, got a good look at Clark. That was fun. Jace Jung just mashed. Jace Jung's mashed for me when I saw him in the Cape. He mashed last year he's mashing again. Hit two home runs, you know, hit an Abel changeup, and then hit, I think, McGarry fastball, actually. So yeah, I like Jace Jung. It's a weird setup, man. I think the first time you see it, I had a friend with me that had seen Jung live before, and it's kind of jarring. The hands are way up there. You know, it's really unusual. But man, he gets it down. He makes good barrel contact. He's on time with a fastball and drives it. I think he'll be fine at third base. It's probably going to be more like a 40, 45 at third. But I think he could tolerate it because he's going to hit, and he showed some power. So I think he's up this year. I took him in the DC last night in like the late 40s rounds, some of those upside rounds. I took a shot on Young because I do think he can hit. He's really, really interesting. On the Philly side, I saw Starlin Cava turn around 98 from Ty Madden. I posted the video. He's a really smooth switch hitter, decent swing from the left side and the right side. Looks like there's a little more pop. I think it's just angles because he hit the ball hard. It was 96 off the bat against Madden. He's interesting, you know, made a couple of decent pieces of contact in that game. I'll probably see more of him over the next couple of days. I saw Eduardo Tite as well. And he's a big boy. He looks like a, you know, 18-year-old catcher. Not humongous, but, what you know, sort of strong, stout sort of catcher build. Swing is fine. Looks like he could be a guy that could develop into a decent catching prospect. You know, I don't know if he's going to be a superstar or whatever. We'd have to see about that one. I saw your boy, Josue Briseño, and I posted a video. And I'm going to apologize, Dylan. I got to apologize. Like that Shaq meme. I'm going to apologize. I wasn't familiar with the game. Dude, he looked really, really good. The swing looked kind of cleaned up, a little bit more fluid, a little bit more smooth. He barreled up, I think it was Able, on a curveball and hit that sucker 111. It zoomed off the bat. He's got bat speed. He's a big fella. I don't know if there's any defensive ability there. I talked to you about that before. But there's a bat. There's a bat. He's legit. So he was really, really interesting. And I'm going to hold the name of the Pirates pitcher that I saw today for my notes. I'm not going to tease that on this podcast. I'm going to save that for the people who are subscribing to Baseball America and paying for our content. Dylan, anything else you wanted to touch on? I know we missed the Jung Ho Lee note, but it doesn't sound like it's that big of a deal. So who cares? Anything else you want to touch on? You want to wrap this sucker up? Some of these quick preseason podcasts, we just go over some notes, talk about some players we're seeing, try to update the listeners.
Yeah, I really want to call the podcast Backfield Vibes, but how did Ty Madden look?
The command wasn't great. The stuff is good. It's a good fastball, 98. You know, he showed the secondaries, slider. I think it was a curveball as well, and then changeup. He's fine. It wasn't outstanding, but he looked good. He looked good. I hope to see him again, and I hope to see him sort of dominate. I'll say this from like a stuff perspective, mechanics, how the arm action looks now, the release point, how the stuff jumps out of the hand, looks really good. That looked really good. That passes the eye test, no problem. Performance wasn't great, though, and that's always a thing. You can pass the eye test, but if you're not performing, what's it really worth? So I just thought he struggled with command a little bit. Obviously didn't get, like, beat up or anything, but he had his moments, and he had some other moments where going back and watching the video, he was kind of missing some spots. So we'll see. But I think that's a big league starter. I think that's a mid-rotation guy. That's a 60 to me. I think he looks the part for sure.
Nice.
So, we'll see if it comes together. But if that's it for questions, Q&A time with the Backfield Vibes. Wrapping up the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast, Backfield Vibes edition, live from Florida. I'm Jeff, he's Dylan. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.